everyone. Welcome back to the Internet Report, where we uncover what's working and what's breaking on the internet, and why. This week, we're discussing outages at Salesforce and Microsoft, talking about the limitations of status pages, and catching up with the latest global outage trends. I'm Barry Collins, and I'll be hosting today with the amazing Mike Hicks, Principal Solutions Analyst at Cisco Thousand Eyes. As always, we've included chapters in the episode description below, so you can skip ahead to the sections that are most interesting to you. And if you haven't already, we'd love you to take a moment to give us a follow over at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen. We're going to start this week's show exploring an outage at Salesforce that occurred on October the 1st. Mike explains what he saw.
There was actually two problems that occurred here. There was sort of one that rolled into the other. Now, the first one we saw, which was the service unavailable, was the system itself, and it first started to be seen in APJC, and that may have been to do with the timing. So we started to see this cancellation effect picking up. We started to see the errors, which was sort of indicative of a load situation. So what happened was, first of all, people were trying to get the instances and they couldn't get anything back. They were starting to get these unavailable messages to start with. Then what happened when it started to come through, it sort of built up to the point where we got sort of 503 errors coming down. Now, what we've subsequently found out when we actually looked at this was that there was a configuration change made on the Salesforce end. Now, there's a key management system, and it was supposed to sort of kick in and make the change to renew the keys.
Here, Mike's talking about the encryption keys, which are used to ensure people trying to connect to Salesforce are actually reaching a genuine company.
So they actually set this up to go, and this was going to kick over. So the timing of this is significant as well. So it's October the 1st. So it was actually due to roll over on October the 1st. So it's subsequently to do this, it actually changed the underlying key management system. So everything was set up, it was tested sort of in isolation, in manual, but what they didn't do was actually roll the clocks forward to October the 1st to see what was happening. They knew that the automatic test, they did have some automatic tests running on this, but what occurred there was it was actually just testing the configuration files, just tested that the key generation process worked. It didn't actually look for the underlying metadata, which was actually missing. Now, because this underlying system had changed, the engineers assumed that this underlying metadata wasn't needed. What happened was that when it actually made the call, so it rolled over to October the 1st, it tried to do the key generation, the underlying metadata wasn't there, so the systems started to fail. Now, what was really interesting was, I said, this build-up. So you started to see this load situation occur, and if we actually looked at it, what we saw was you could see it sort of increasing to the point where services were just not responding, and then they became unavailable.
As Mike mentioned, there were two parts to this outage. The second part involved the Salesforce status page and trust site that aims to keep customers informed about issues with the service.
Now, what happened was when people started to go, okay, we can't get instances, let's see if there's something going on. What they then started to see was this increase of load coming to try and hit the trust pages. And then there was an error basically on their third-party firewall system was actually looking at this. They thought what they were going on to was a denial of service. So we had this cascading effect. So what then happened was it actually blocked the traffic. So anything going to trust or the status site got blocked. So people couldn't actually get the response coming back from there. Now, if they had sort of API set up, that was unaffected. They could actually do that call. It was specifically going to those URLs, those trust sites.
You've talked in the past about the importance of being able to correlate different signals in order to identify the cause of an outage and the limitations of relying on a status page alone. How did we see that play out here?
Well, as I said, we had these two instances. It's kind of interesting because in this case, because people couldn't get the instances, their first port of call is to go to the status page. And then the status page actually wasn't available. So they went to see what was happening. And what they then got was this trigger, this bug in the firewall that then caused the request to the trust or the status site to be blocked. So they're blind. They're in at that point there. So this is why we sort of correlate other signals. Now, Salesforce.com are actually pretty good at actually putting that up. So they have this trust site, which is very transparent, tells you what's going on, gives the information there. But if that's my only single source, then I'm actually blind at that point there. So this is then where we want to sort of correlate and put these things together. So look into these multiple signals. So again, you know, this is where I'm talking about this fact of I actually look to say, what am I getting back from the application? Okay, I'm getting it. There's application. Is that systemic across everything that's hosted in AWS or hosted within that region? No, it's specific to this application. So I'm already starting to narrow it down. And then again, correlating that with the final part with the network. Now, if I'm just relying on one single source of information, being the status page, I don't know what to do. And again, obviously, I know it's down. I can't get to it. I know there's a problem, but I don't know what to do to the next stage. the whole point of being able to see across those different signals and correlating together is I know what steps I can do. Obviously, if I'm relying on Salesforce itself as my sole source of information from there, then and it's the problem lay with them, then I really just have to sit and wait. But at least I'm informed. I know what it is. I'm not wasting time with my IT staff trying to troubleshoot the network. I'm not changing prefixes to re-advertise my network because I think it's some sort of path information there.
And explain how you were able to trace the network path to show that the problem was with the application hosted on Amazon servers and not, say, an authentication issue.
Yeah, so as you mentioned there, sort of these are actually hosted on AWS, so Amazon Web Services there. So when we actually looked at this, first of all, so I said going through, initially what I could see was this build-up of traffic. So again, I'm seeing this castellation effect, which to me tells me there's a load issue, right? So I'm actually starting to get traffic through. That's the first thing. The next thing, I know this is hosted on AWS, or these particular instances were hosted on AWS. So then I could actually do a filter on AWS itself to see, is it any other applications? So are we looking for an underlying hosting issue, or are we looking for something specific to that particular instance or that particular application? So in this case then, so we filter to see AWS, and the only things we're seeing affected are Salesforce and these particular instances that we could see there. At this point, I'm believing it's something to do with the application. So I can tell this initially by the types of errors we're getting back. So we're getting sort of timeout issues coming back. And I said then as it built up, we're getting these 503s, so these service unavailable errors. We know these were server-side errors. So the point is I'm actually getting a response coming back from something. So even if I can't get to a back-end system, I'm getting a response to tell me that I can't respond to the request you're making to it, even though I might be able to get to the front door. But then just to sort of validate that further, then I actually sort of look at the network path itself. So understanding, you know, where it come from all regions, so say from APJC and then looking from the Americas and EMEA to understand what's happening from there. And I can see all these paths up there. What I'll typically do at that point is I'll actually, you know, we can have filters to actually look at the loss rate and the latency I'm seeing on those. And I sort of wind those down to what would be acceptable levels, but, you know, sort of right down to the bottom, just see if there's anything that coincides and it was quite clean. The fact I saw this manifesting at an application level and I'm seeing it impacting multiple regions is normally indicative that I'm not going to see it in a network issue there. I mean, and that's correlated then again with the fact I'm getting these 503s coming back, or I'm seeing the 503s in responses. I guess the point of all this is what I'm actually doing is I'm correlating signals together. So I'm looking at a particular signal and then moving on to the next signal. Say, okay, what does this tell me? So I've narrowed it down that point to this being an application. We can see which instances is going. We know it's not a hosting environment issue. We know it's been the application. And then beyond that, then we've looked for the information to come back from Salesforce to tell us specifically what happened. But the point is we've been able to isolate down to that fault domain to say this is where it is. And once you do that, then you can actually take the necessary steps to sort of mitigate this issue going forward.
And just tell us a bit more about the mental workflow you go through when you first discover an outage such as this and which signal we should check first.
The biggest part of any journey is going to be the network, right? This is where I spend most of my time. And I'm looking for systemic issues. If it's going to be a network issue, it's probably going to be related to a particular region itself or particular area, because the internet by design is dynamic, it's resilient, I can route around things, I have these issues. Now, if it's something sort of fundamental that's going on within the host environment, you know, we've seen in the past, we have this forwarding loss at that last hop there. Then again, I'll look to see, is it impacting a particular region? Is it impacting everybody there? Once I've actually done that, because I've taken out the biggest part of my journey then, now I'm actually then looking for breadcrumbs, footprints, correlated signals within the application itself to understand what's going on there. The first thing that I'm looking for is, am I just simply timing out, or am I actually getting some sort of error code there? And then this is what we saw here. So we saw the status cards coming back. The other thing I'd actually like to look at is the pattern of the outage. We talk about these lights on, lights off type of situation as opposed to the castellation or this graduated effect. Yeah, I'm a very simple man, I'm a network engineer. I love these patterns that sort of evolve. And this was quite a distinctive pattern. It's this sort of castellation effect where you can see. Now, what that starts to tell you is that you're getting some sort of request through. So some servers are impacted, now some less servers are impacted, for example. If I'm looking at just number of outages, it's an outage. But if I'm actually looking at these levels of granularity, i.e. is it the servers, is it number of interfaces, then I can actually sort of see how this is manifesting. And that starts to give you clues. So it really is sort of putting all these together. But I'll go through this process of looking at what that service delivery chain looks like and then breaking it down from there. So what do I need to do first of all? I need to resolve the name. Am I able to get to the site? Because that gives me the address where I get to. Now, can I get to there? Is it impacting the network? and then we'll move on to the application itself. Sort of go through the, if you like, the seven-layer model, looking at the application, the presentation, and the connection and network, and so on.
Users of Microsoft's Outlook software may have struggled to access their email on October 10th. What happened here, Mike?
The thing to consider here is sort of how this manifested itself. So people actually couldn't get to their email in some areas there. Then in some systems, it actually looks like it was a crash that was occurring on the system there. My first thought is, I can't get to the application, therefore must be a problem on the network. And those are the ones we're getting the sort of no response or no email coming through. Obviously, the crash is something slightly different. But what actually occurred here was, again, it was some sort of configuration change that was actually made on the Microsoft side that impacted the way the clients were making the calls to the system. Now, I don't know specifically what went on there in terms of what configuration change was made, but what happened was it caused sort of memory exhaustion. So when we got memory exhaustion, then it could be a number of things. It could be for the fact that we're trying to call these dynamic link libraries that have been moved or changed around, or it could be something with the caching where we have multiple sessions open from there. The point is, when you start to get this memory exhaustion, it starts to play havoc on the applications. Basically, I actually can't retrieve the information. It's not there. Start to get these situations. Now, what then happened was then the report started to come in. So Microsoft engineers identified what it was. They knew they made the change and they sort of rolled it back. But they actually put a dynamic fix in to actually sort of resolve the problem. And then this kind of went on for a little bit longer and they were just getting people to reset the clients. They had a little bit of a telltale sign that it actually just updated some of the clients. So they kind of had a starting point where they need to look. And then they saw the error rates coming in. And their point then is that they need to identify what is actually sort of causing that memory exhaustion. And then they can make the change to sort of instigate the resolution.
These kind of things are hard to guard against, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. As we talked about a little bit in the Salesforce one, is that there's sort of tests in place. You can actually do this. But it's only when you start to get these things happening at sort of scale, you can sort of see what's occurring. It's only when these sort of things sort of combine together, you get these sort of perfect storm, as it were, where this condition comes from this. And when they start to overlap, in the case of Salesforce, when the date rolled over to October the 1st, and these types of things, it sort of be triggered by these offsets. And realistically, you need to be able to sort of test everything in situ to understand. Now, you're right, they're hard to guard against, because these sort of things happen. Nothing here is deliberate. These are these perfect storms type of situations that occur. But what the key is at that point is to be able to identify where that problem is occurring and then be able to take steps to sort of understand it. As I said, in this case, they knew they'd done the client upgrade. But if there was a way they could actually look at that entire service delivery chain in one, then as soon as you're doing that sort of push to a configuration change, whatever, you can start to sort of track everything together. Now, and this is where we're coming back to just looking at these signals correlated together. So I can actually understand, am I reachable? Have I got my network path there? And again, in this situation, going through that thought process that I went through, we're starting to look at the network level. Can we actually get that connectivity? And in this case, then I started to see timeout situations. So I saw sort of DNS timeouts. I saw HTTP server timeouts or network connection timeouts. So I'm seeing the service timeout itself, so I can't actually access it itself. In this case, I'm not seeing specific 503s or 502 bad gateways coming back. I'm actually sort of seeing the service timeout. Again, I can get there, and then I'm looking for loss rate and things down that path there. But really, as I said, the point is to be able to see everything holistically, to understand what's going on. So as soon as I make a change, I can see a part that I might not have been aware of has been impacted. And then you can sort of take these steps to, if possible, roll it back. It's not always possible. If it's in the case of dynamic link library, for example, it might just be that something's moved. So I'm actually searching for it in one particular area. It's no longer there. So the indexing's changed, those types of things. So it might then have to be, we go and make a complete change to a system or implement a dynamic fix. But there is also, like I say, where we roll back. Now, the interesting things about rolling back stuff is that we then get into this element where we sort of see a pattern because we've made a change for a reason. If we have to roll it back, what you then need to do is to be able to look at that system. So when you implement that change again, do you have the same situation? And then this is why we sometimes see these situations where you have an error occurring or you see an outage occurring or degradation, service degradation. And then a week later, you might see it again, or 2 days later, you sort of see it again. Now the footprint might be smaller, but it's there. Now, obviously, once you make it, hopefully if you can identify where the problem is, when you do that rollback, you're not going to have that same situation again. But we often sort of see these echoes going through.
Okay, Mike, let's turn to the overall outage trends and what we've seen over the past few weeks.
So this time we're actually looking at a three-week period, but the trends actually sort of came the same. So we saw this downward trend in mid-August, and then that sort of reversed the last period there. But now from September 30th to October the 20th, we actually started to see the total number of global outages decreasing. So in the first week, it was like a 6% decrease, and outages dropped from 192 to 180. And then this continued in the following week. So October 7th and 13th, they decreased from 180 to 170. And it was like a 6% decrease compared to the previous week. And then a further decrease of 9% in the following week, where the outage dropped from 170 to 155. Now, the US actually followed a slightly different pattern during this period. So the outages initially increased by 41% during the first week. But then the rest of the period, we actually sort of followed in and saw this decrease with an 18% drop, 82 to 67 in that October 7th to 13th. And then there was a further 6% drop that following week. So October 14th to 20th, where outages sort of fell from 67 to 63. Now, we're talking about this three-week period. When we actually look at then sort of the number of US-centric outages, an average across those 3 weeks, and I sort of did the 2 weeks and 2 weeks and just looked from an average there, was actually 42% of all network outages occurred within the United States. This was up from 33% in that previous period, so September 16th to 29th. This is a return to this pattern we've sort of seen repeatedly, where the US-centric outages typically accounted for at least 40% of all observed outages.
And what have we seen in the month-over-month data? How did August compare to September? And how does it look like October shaping up?
In September, we saw 763 outages globally there. Now, this was a 14% decrease from the 888 that we saw in August. The US outages also decreased by 20%. They dropped from 387 in August to 308 in September. Now, this pattern actually sort of mirrors a trend we've seen in 2023, when the total global and US outages sort of decreased in August, September. But if I go back to previous years, it was kind of the other way around. So I actually started to see this increase as we sort of come out of the Northern Hemisphere summer period or this holiday period. Now, when we're looking at the October trend, the numbers are starting to sort of increase across from there. They're still below what we're seeing at the moment, obviously, because we're not fully through the month. But it'd be interesting to see sort of how they pick up. Typically, what we've seen coming out of this period as the October numbers have actually increased, and then before we start to drop down again towards the end of the year. But we'll see how it trends.
And that's our show. Please like and subscribe. We really appreciate it. And not only does this ensure you're in the know when a new episode's published, it also helps us to shape the show for you. You can follow us on X at @thousandeyes or send questions and feedback to internetreport@thousandeyes.com. And if you're interested in checking out Mike's webinar on troubleshooting digital experiences across owned and unowned networks, we've included that link here in the episode description. Until next time, goodbye.